Marijuana is legal for personal use in Oregon by adults. But just as kids ask adults to buy booze for them, they no doubt seek out ways to obtain pot while they're not legally old enough to buy or use it. And it is that behavior that Oregon health officials are addressing through a new campaign called Stay True to You. It is meant to make a case to teens why they should hold off on using marijuana. This comes out of the Oregon Health Authority Public Health Division. Our two guests come from there. Dr. Katrina Hedberg is the state health officer, and she co-chaired the Retail Marijuana Scientific Advisory Committee. Welcome, Dr. Hedberg.
Yes, thank you.
Good to have you here. And Katie Mosley is with us as well. She is a policy specialist at the Oregon Health Authority Public Health Division. Good to have you here, Katie.
Thank you. My name is Katie.
Kati, sorry about that. Kati, if you're using a speakerphone, pick it up, please. It sounds like at the end of the tunnel.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Interesting. All right. So first question is for you, then. I assume that you two have worked together a fair amount. How long has the whole project on youth pot use been in the works?
I'll take a shot at answering that. It was during the 2016 regular session that the Oregon legislature passed two bills that gave the Oregon Health Authority and the Public Health Division both the money and the mandate to develop, pilot, and evaluate this youth marijuana use prevention pilot campaign. And so we've been working on it since late March.
Okay, so not terribly long then. Okay, not like it dates back a long way. But the Retail Marijuana Scientific Advisory Committee, did its work begin a bit earlier than that, Dr. Hedberg?
Yes, it did. Once the citizens in Oregon had passed ballot measure 91, we knew that things were progressing to allow for retail or private use and then retail sales. And so what we actually talked with our colleagues in Colorado to ask some of their approach to it, what would make sense. Because, as you know, at the federal level, marijuana is still a Schedule I substance, so there aren't a lot of scientific data. And so what we really wanted to do was to be able to approach this with what's known about the science and what isn't, and then how can we translate that into really evidence-based or scientifically sound messages to reach different groups.
How different is what's available to you when you're trying to deal with facts and figures, medical effects of marijuana versus any other substance out there? Is it greatly reduced from what you have available, for example, for methamphetamine?
So, you know, it's sort of a multiple part question. So marijuana as a substance, a medical substance, that's what's Schedule I, and so it cannot be, from the federal standpoint, prescribed as a medication. That said, there are a number of states that do have medical marijuana. But because of that, it doesn't have the same, if you will, quality control that many other medications have, where you know the exact amount of active chemical, and you know the dose, and you know how much people are taking. So that's part of what is lacking. When you're talking about other illicit drugs that people use, again, those there isn't any quality control, et cetera, but things like methamphetamine, of course, the amphetamines also have some medicinal value, and so a fair amount is known because there has been trials in it. Different forms of that are used in medicine itself. So it really is because it's been very difficult to study other than what we would call observational studies, which is you look at people who have used it voluntarily on their own, and you try to look at what the effects are.
So did the committee end up handing off a set of recommendations for shaping the approach in Oregon or things to include in the campaign?
No. So what we did, and again, this started long before the legislature had allocated any funds or that there should be a youth campaign. And so the first thing that the committee addressed was there, of course, we needed to determine what a single serving size would be, especially if you were packaging something for edibles. And so we looked at packaging and labeling. So that was the first issue. Then we also looked at the effects on developing developing fetus for pregnant women, breastfeeding. We looked at effects on adolescents, and then we also looked at effects on adults, whether it's respiratory or some of the long-term mental health issues. So again, and what we did was the strength of the science and looked at the messages that Colorado had come up with to see whether or not we concurred that those were scientifically sound and what we would say about those variety of areas.
So just out of curiosity, I know that we're going to be talking about teens extensively, but curious to know what you did come up with in the way of a recommendation on gestational use and breastfeeding use.
Yeah, so a couple things. One is that when we know that THC is a substance, so that, of course, is the primary psychoactive chemical in marijuana. There's also different, they're called cannabinoids, cannabidiol, the CBD, that has certain pain effects. et cetera. So again, there are a variety of chemicals and that gets to be difficult. But we know that the THC gets dissolved in fat and it gets transferred both to the fetus as well as to a baby who might be breastfeeding. So we know that those two are exposed. However, again, because of the lack of sort of clinical trials and the amount that's used, et cetera, it's very hard to come up with any definitive statements. But we were focusing not on the medical use, but on the retail use. And so the recommendations were really for pregnant or breastfeeding women. They, if they're using retail use, because they're interested in using it with their friends on a Friday or whatever, they should probably wait until they're not pregnant. So it's one of these kind of cautions that we have around. And the same is true for alcohol, of course, that's a big caution that we don't want pregnant women to be drinking alcohol.
Marijuana is the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. We're moving to a specific focus on the state of Oregon's new campaign, Stay True to You, designed to keep teens from using marijuana before they are legally allowed to. Dr. Katrina Hedberg is the state health officer, and she co-chaired the Retail Marijuana Scientific Advisory Committee. Cody Mosley is a policy specialist. They're both with the Oregon Health Authority's Public Health Division. You can join us on the exchange. Input welcome. Questions welcome. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Cody, if you would, walk us through the process of moving toward a campaign and a slogan and all the work that has happened in just a few short months, it sounds like.
Sure. Thank you. So, yes, as Katrina was saying, the Retail Marijuana Science Advisory Committee left us in a good position to create a campaign that was really grounded in what we do know about the health effects of marijuana on adolescents. They provided, that group provided the health authority with the advice and direction to finalize public health statements about the health effects of marijuana for adolescents. And those were the statements that we used to ground the campaign, and those were the statements that we moved into focus group testing and finally into creative. To say a few words about focus group testing, we did extensive focus group testing throughout the state for this campaign, both in urban and rural areas, and with both the general population and then some of the priority populations that the Oregon Health Authority is always focused on making sure our messages reach. And those were African Americans, American Indian, Alaska Natives, Asian Pacific Islanders, and we also did some Spanish language Latino focus groups in order to best understand how youth and young adults receive information about marijuana, who they consider to be credible messengers, what their level of knowledge is, and what kind of information they're looking for. So ultimately, we did 28 focus groups and reached 260 youth or young adults in Oregon. The age group that we focused on in our focus groups was 14 to 20-year-olds, though the campaign is meant to reach 12 to 20-year-olds overall.
So of the stuff you got from the focus groups, was there any one thing that consistently rose above the murmurs about the things that people wanted that they were interested in with marijuana?
Yes, there are two statements that both young adults and youth found to be most motivating and believable when we ask them about that. And those statements are: brain development is not complete until your 20s. For the best chance to reach your full potential, you should not use marijuana to get high while you are young. And the second one is being high will impair your ability to drive, play sports, play video games, bike, or do other activities. We also learned that youth and young adults seek information online and from peers and adults who have experience using marijuana. So for these reasons, in our campaign, we very much prioritize delivering the campaign through digital and social media outreach to be in places where youth and young adults are already seeking information online. One thing that we found through focus group testing that was a little bit of a surprise to us but was consistent across all the groups that we tested was that youth and young adults really strongly preferred a first-person or testimonial message that featured people telling their stories and discussing their experiences with marijuana. And this included people who were telling that story with an empathetic lens on the struggles of being a teen. Youth and young adults also responded really strongly to the message about how they are role models to siblings, younger family members, and even just younger children in their community. This was a really interesting piece of the focus group work because it was less that the youth and young adults articulated this, but when the question was posed to them, there was a physical response that you could observe in the focus groups that they were reframing how they were thinking about marijuana and how they were thinking about their choice to use and what impact that might have. Youth and young adults were not surprisingly very interested in credible information about the health effects of marijuana, and they were skeptical of any message that was presented in such a way that it sounded like it was one-sided and denying the other side of the conversation about marijuana. So if there was a conversation that was too equivocal about the benefits of it, they didn't believe that. If there was a conversation that was too equivocal about the harms of it, they didn't believe that. They were very much interested in balanced and tempered information that was grounded in what research there is. And you'll see in our campaign that we've really tried to respect that, again, by building from the work that the Retail Marijuana Science Advisory Committee did in terms of directing us on what those messages are that are grounded in the science.
Kati Mosley is a policy specialist with the Public Health Division of the Oregon Health Authority. Dr. Katrina Hedberg is state health officer, and she co-chaired the Retail Marijuana Scientific Advisory Committee that Kati just mentioned. You can join us as we talk about the state's campaign, Stay True to You, to guide teens away from marijuana before they're old enough to use it legally. 800-838-3760 for your comments. If you'd like to join us by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Dr. Hedberg, I noticed when I looked at the website, there was a fair amount there about brain development, so that takes care of some of the needs raised by the focus groups, certainly. How much, though, is known about the effect of marijuana on the brain, given, as we've spoken already, about the lack of research into it?
Yeah, so very good question. I do think that there's some, the issues. Everyone knows, I mean, the real reason that people are using, again, retail, I'm not talking about medical marijuana, but retail is, of course, to get high. It is for the psychoactive effects. And so we do know that it's harder for people to concentrate, reaction times are slowed. There are a number of those just immediate. And when it's harder to concentrate and you're feeling a little fuzzy or you're not able to, it is harder to learn. So it's both kind of the short acting as well as some of the potential longer effects if kids have more difficulty learning, etc. So again, the issue isn't, gee, if you use marijuana now when you're 15 or 16 and you use it a little bit, what's going to happen when you're 25 is there going to be some problem with your brain development, etc. That piece is not as solid because, again, we haven't, there have been some data to track people over time, but we know that immediate effects, kids are using it, have a harder time in school, and have a harder time learning, etc. Those are some of the very immediate effects. And then, because it is a psychoactive substance, the idea is that potentially it could also have some of these longer-term cognitive effects.
Even without marijuana, I've heard ranges from 25 to 29 in age as the time when the brain is done doing its initial forming. What is the currently accepted number there?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Again, it's probably earlier for some people and a little later for others, but that's exactly right, that the brain, and for those of us who are older than 29, we know that our ability to learn or our cognitive function isn't necessarily as sharp as it was a few years ago. So I think that's true, and anything that then potentially interferes with the potential for learning, et cetera, may have some longer-term effects, but we can't say that it will for sure. We know that it does have that potential.
Let's bring some other voices in. Here is John in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Katrina Hedberg and Kati Mosley from the Oregon Public Health Division.
Hi. I tried and started an experiment with marijuana about 4 years ago. I decided after almost 50 years of smoking that I would try not smoking for a year, year and a half at a time. It's been very enlightening. So, and I want to start by saying the amount that I smoked was a very small amount, irregularly, maybe twice a week, three times a week. And I started at age 21 in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And what I discovered was the effects that I felt didn't really subside until about completely for about 10 days and not fully change back to clear thinking for up to 2 months. And during that time, near the end of the two, as we approached the 2 month time, it would fade in and out, where some days I'd be crystal clear and then other days I'd be really foggy. Now at about 2 months, I'm clear most days. Mm-hmm. But still, at the same time, I'm very glad that they've legalized it, because it was so hypocritical that alcohol and cigarettes were illegal. So I found that very frustrating, along with a few other things the government does.
All right, but, anyway, but given your own choice, then you finally decided, that's it, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for sharing the story, John. Appreciate that. So, Katrina Hedberg, what is that a fairly common story? I mean, I know you tried to get some testimonials into the campaign, but is that experience that John cites, feeling about 2 months before you get full clarity, pretty natural?
Yeah, so I can ask Kati a little bit about that kind of clarity and what the longer term. What I can say is that, as I mentioned a little bit ago, THC is fat soluble. So we know that even for somebody who uses, let's say, on a Friday or a Saturday night, that they, if you're doing a urine test, for example, to look for impaired driving or something like that, it may stay in your urine, or a drug screen before you have employment, it may stay in your body for up to a week, just to THC. And so there aren't really data about how quickly, you know, you the cognitive effects go back to clear thinking or whatever. But I think that idea that that John said is based on some scientific data, that this is not a substance that it's sort of easy that you take and you feel the effects immediately and then it stops and you feel the effects and it's out of your body. It does stick around for quite a while.
Cuddy Mosley, John could be one of your testimonials. I mean, how did you reach out to people who had stories?
That's an excellent question. So we have developed this campaign through a contract with a media communications firm, and they did a call for people who were willing to share their story of marijuana for the purposes of this campaign, and screened and received people who were willing to share their testimonials that way. And then from that, we selected the final folks whose story we wanted to share. It's interesting you ask that, though. Since the campaign has launched, I have received a few emails from others throughout Oregon who are interested in sharing their story as part of the campaign, and I'm tentatively exploring that as an option of how we might reach back to those people and see how we could engage them.
How tricky a message is this to shape, Kati, because you're trying to give some information that will be respected by your target group, people from age 12 to 20, but you're also, you can't get too heavy-handed, I'm thinking. You probably can't do things like the cigarette campaigns that showed people smoking through their tracheotomy holes and things like that. So how tricky is it to shape this message?
I think you have to be really attentive to your audience, and that was why we invested so extensively in focus group research, was so that we could feel we had a good grounding in the audience to know what they would respond to. And we focus group tested our initial messages, but we also tested throughout the creative development process to take a temperature about where our concepts were landing with the audience. And I think that was really helpful and useful in arriving at something that we feel confident is going to land well and have the intended effect. Ultimately, though, what we're doing is we're evaluating the campaign. The bill that gave us the authority and the money to implement the campaign also requires us to evaluate it, which is a really great thing. So we have hired another company, RMC Research, to do an evaluation of the campaign that will allow us to report to the legislature in time for the next session on the effect that the campaign is having. So that's going to allow us to make adjustments as well and correct anything that may not be working as well as we'd like and enhance things that are.
What is the media mix you're going for here? This is not like you can just splash the TV with ads and be able to reach teenagers. So where are you taking this?
Right. So we're taking this into the digital and online world. There will be a lot of advertising that's served up through platforms like Pandora and Hulu, other streaming sites. YouTube is going to be an important one. Our social media properties include Facebook and Instagram. And we will also be in-app advertising. So, you know, when you're on your phone and you're in a game, for example, there'll be ads for this that come up, as well as having some terrestrial radio and a limited television buy. There'll also be more traditional forms of advertising, such as billboards and malls. We're actually in movie theaters now that the summer season has really started, that we're running some pre-roll things in movie theaters as well. The campaign is very video heavy. I think by the time we're finished implementing everything that's in creation, we will have 30 videos that are part of the campaign.
How interactive is it? Can teens click on things to get more information or to put in questions or something like that?
Absolutely, both through the social media properties, Instagram and Facebook, and then also on the website, staytruetoyou.org. There is an ask page where we offer the opportunity for people to ask questions, and they have the option of having those answered privately or having them become part of a public discussion, obviously disassociated from their name, but answered publicly as well.
We have an email here from Adam in Eugene. He says, I've heard that teen driving accidents have gone down in Colorado since pot legalization. Does pot quell aggressive driving, or does Colorado have a successful program of teen use dissuasion? Dr. Hedberg, you mentioned talking to Colorado about their program.
Yeah, so a very good question. I haven't asked them about that specifically. Of course, what's difficult is when you're looking at driving in general, and then there's impaired driving, and what are the things that cause impaired driving, whether it's being under the influence of marijuana, being under the influence of alcohol, texting, talking on cell phones, etc. And so it's very hard to make these kind of overall correlations between, driving, for example, car crashes or fatalities or whatever, and directly link them with something that's been happening with, for example, marijuana, etc. So that's a very interesting question, and I'll reach out to them about that specific one. But there has been some thought, impaired driving is bad, and so that needs to be a huge part of our message, not just to youth, but to everybody, that driving while drinking is bad, but so is driving under the influence of other substances.
The program is called Stay True to You. It's a campaign using many media, as you just heard from Katie Mosley. She's a policy specialist with the Public Health Division of the Oregon Health Authority. Dr. Katrina Hedberg works there as well as the state health officer, and she co-chaired the Retail Marijuana Scientific Advisory Committee. StayTrueToYou.org if you'd like to look at it yourself. It is linked through our website at jeffexchange.org. I want to thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right.